is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, save $3,500 on the Dr. Dish CT Plus and score free custom graphics during Dr. Dish Basketball's Push Beyond sales event. Shop this exclusive offer now until March 31st while supplies last. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Pete Alexandru, coach at CAI Postgrad based out of Clearwater, Florida, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, coaches. Excited to talk about Coach's Mirror from Teams of Men. It's a game changer for your team's film analysis, blending Kip Ione's coaching expertise with AI. Short on time or staff, this is for you. Send in a game or up to five and get back a detailed report. We're talking tendencies, strategies, even what opponents might use against you. It's like finding the other team's scouting report in your gym. And here's a bonus. Intrigued by AI and scouting? Grab our free 10-prompt PDF sheet at teamsofmenmembership.group/coachmirror. It's a quick download and a great start to revolutionizing your season review. Don't miss out, coaches. Head to our site and see how Coach's Mirror can transform your game analysis. Catch you there.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, wearing his girls basketball Olmsted Falls state champion sweatshirt. Nice. Yeah. Good work. I know we talked about this last week, so we're not going to belabor the point of high school basketball. We're going to get right into the NBA. So Jay, I know there's a lot of interesting things going on in the league right now. Where are we starting? Where are we starting tonight?
I think we have to start with the game that happened, just ended a little bit ago. It's 11:30 now, but the Lakers and Bucks went to double overtime. The Lakers playing without LeBron. Austin Reeves, triple-double. Anthony Davis, huge down the stretch. Giannis also had a triple-double. The Bucks had a 19-point game with 8 minutes and 19-point lead with eight minutes and 24 seconds left, I think. And I'll be honest with you, Mike. Like, I had it on in the background. I was like grading some stuff and getting some stuff ready for the next 2 days of school, trying to get stuff ahead for when we get back from break, because I'm not going to be doing any work over break. And I like looked away, and then the next thing I knew, it was like a 4-point game, and I was like, "What just happened?" And apparently their defense was terrible. The Bucks had a terrible stretch of defense. And then there was some great plays down the stretch, sent it to overtime, some key blocks. And then after it goes overtime, we go to double overtime, where Reeves hits a huge three. And then from there, they hit some clutch free throws down the stretch of the Lakers. And it was what it was. There was a really good out of bounds play drawn up for end of regulation for Giannis, but Giannis missed like a point blank shot. So it was pretty exciting, Mike. It was exciting stuff. And the Lakers win. Good for the Cavs. Bad for the Bucks. Good for the Lakers. The Lakers are pretty much solidified in the play-in at this point. They're solidified in at least the 9 seed, because I think they now have a 4-game lead over the Warriors, if I'm not incorrect. The Warriors are in trouble. I don't know if
Warriors beat the Heat though tonight.
Yeah, Draymond Draymond like choke slammed a guy again. He didn't actually choke slam. He may have fouled a guy and grabbed him by his neck.
He may have done that.
So, but yeah, huge win for the Lakers. Huge win.
So, obviously, to do it without LeBron is huge for LA. And you look at the Lakers, and for so long during this season, it feels like they've been flirting with 500. And you look at their record now, and they're 40-32. So I think they're pretty well entrenched, probably into that 9 seed. I mean, Phoenix has a really tough schedule down the stretch. Phoenix right now is 2 games ahead of the Lakers. But I know that their last few games, in fact, I'm going to pull up their schedule just so we can talk a little bit about that. But they are, over these last, whatever, 10, 12 games, whatever we have left, they have just a murderer's row as far as the end of their schedule. So if we look at it, this is the Phoenix Suns schedule: at Denver, at Oklahoma City, at New Orleans, home for the Cavs, home for Minnesota, home for New Orleans, home for the Clippers, at Sacramento, at Minnesota. So every one of those teams, at least the first, until you get to Sacramento, Sacramento is the only team that is not in the top 5 in their conference.
Sacramento is looking like they're going to drop down into the play-in tonight because Dallas is up 20 on them right now.
And they have a home and home. So I believe the next game between these two teams is, I think it's on Friday that they play again. So clearly if Dallas sweeps Sacramento, that's going to put Dallas in a pretty good spot to be able to, because I would assume then they would get the tiebreaker over Sacramento. And I don't know what the previous, where they are in terms of season series, but if Dallas gets both of those games.
Doncic has 28, 10, and 5 with 3 steals already.
He's ridiculous. So that would pretty much, I think, move Dallas, have them feeling pretty good about getting the 6th seed, and that would drop Sacramento into that 7-8 game. So I think when you look at Phoenix's schedule, it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility that, I mean, I don't know how many of those games Phoenix wins, but I think they would be doing a heck of a job if they could finish 500 over this stretch of games. And if they go 500, I think you have to, if you're the Lakers, you have to think you have a pretty good chance of overtaking them and getting out of the 9-10 spot, which clearly you don't want to have to win 2 games in the play-in just to be able to get into the playoffs as the number 8 seed. I mean, for Phoenix right now, them being in the play-in, considering everything that they put into this Kevin Durant trade and the sign and the Beal trade, I mean, it's there's not really a path. I guess you could say next year that if they're healthier, that they play a complete season and yeah, they get back up towards the top of the Western Conference. But I'm not sure that Kevin Durant is getting any better as he ages another year. And I'm certainly not sure that Bradley Beal is getting better as he ages another year. Maybe you could say that Booker is still in his prime and improving and getting better. But as we've said all season long, since you first put this team together, these guys, their track record says they're not going to stay healthy, and they haven't been able to stay healthy this season, with the exception of Durant, who's been fairly available. Beal obviously has been never or nearly never available, and Booker has kind of been in and out of the lineup all season. So when you look at the Lakers, it feels like most of the season we've been asking the question, or we've been reading about, hey, the Lakers are circling around 500. They're going to be in that 9-10 play-in spot. And if they continue to play well, I think there's a decent chance that they can get to that number 8 seed or get to that 8th spot. And that takes them out of, then they only got to win 1 play-in game. And look, I think that the question is, right, who do the Lakers want to play? I think they want to play Oklahoma City, right? Of the top seeds, I think that's who, if they could draw anybody, I think they'd probably want to draw OKC just because of the size factor.
They're young.
Yep.
They're young. Yeah.
Minnesota. I mean, I know Minnesota has the size, so the advantage that the Lakers might have against Oklahoma City kind of goes away with Minnesota, but Minnesota, you have the same
you have the same concerns, right, as you do about Oklahoma City, just in terms of their experience as a team and their first time going through it as constituted with Edwards, and who knows when Towns is going to be back. So I don't know that, man, the Lakers are such a hard team to figure out, because you feel like basically LeBron and Davis have been healthy all year, and yet they're still down currently in the number 9 seed. And like we said, maybe they crawl up into number 8, but they're a hard team to read. They win the in-season tournament. They look great doing that. Then they kind of fall into a tailspin. They've been, I would say, very mediocre all year, despite the fact that Davis and LeBron have been pretty much healthy the whole entire season. And they're both arguably going to be on the all-NBA team when all is said and done. Hard to believe that Anthony Davis is not going to make it. And when you look at LeBron's statistics, it's hard to believe he's not going to make at least the third team. And so you're talking about two all-NBA guys having really good seasons at their ages, and yet they're still down. It speaks to the strength of the Western Conference, but based on what I'm seeing from a schedule standpoint, I think they probably are able to catch Phoenix, because I just don't see many wins there on Phoenix's schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, let's talk on the other side of the coin, Milwaukee. Like, what are they like? Their defense has been so bad in games. And then they're very streaky, it seems. Like, they go through spurts where they're playing really good on the defensive end, and then it's like they get lazy. They just get lazy. And you know, Doc's always been known for having a pretty good defense, right? Like, I mean, I'm not counting his Joel Embiid years. Okay.
I would say, but that's like, probably been his
MO, has always
been calling card, but certainly with the Celtics, when they won the title, they won that title. I would say you consider those teams to be defensive minded teams, right? When you throw Kevin Garnett out there and the sort of the leadership that he showed on that end of the floor, I think, yeah, it's probably fair to say.
So, and like, I'm going to play the same card, like the same game that you played with the Bucks here. This is the Bucks schedule. And honestly, I see two games out of their last, what do they got? 11 games that are like, they should definitely win. The other games, I think, could, you know, you could coin flip them almost. Pelicans, I think that's a coin flip, depending on what Pelicans team shows up, right? Okay. And that's because that's at New Orleans. Okay. They play at Atlanta, which they should win that game. All right. I mean, I guess three games, because they got Washington too. So at Washington, Memphis, for some godforsaken reason, plays good against the good teams. I don't know what it is about Memphis, but they've been playing well against good teams, and then they get blown out by Wizards. I think they lost to the Wizards the other day. Okay. Then they play Toronto, who's not a team that's like going quietly into the night, even though they're terrible. Okay. Then they go the last five games of the year for the Bucks, the Knicks, the Celtics, Orlando, OKC, Orlando.
Like, so you have to figure, right, for of four of those last five, I mean, the schedule's pretty soft. Atlanta, Washington, Memphis, Toronto. That's a nice little stretch where if you're the Bucks, you got to think we're going 4-0 in those games. But then those last five, New York's going to be playing hard. Boston could be resting people at that point. Who knows? I mean, they may not, but they certainly could be. They're going to have the Eastern Conference.
That's going to be a week before the season ends. That's April 9th.
Yeah, so there's a decent chance that even if guys play, they're going to play 25 minutes and not 35 minutes. So
yeah.
And then Orlando, Oklahoma City are both going to be playing for something, you have to guess. Maybe not in the final game of the season. Who knows? Teams at that point could be trying to angle for different seeding and trying to find a particular opponent. But I think what matters here is that when you're two games behind, you have to have obviously a two games better record. I don't know if the Cavs, what's the tiebreaker between?
We have the tiebreaker because we have a better in-division record than they do. We clinched it when we beat Indiana the other day.
So have we played them?
We're 2-2. We're 2-2 against Milwaukee. So then when it goes to 2-2, then they go to the division record. And we are going to have a better division record than division. We are 10. We are 10-5, okay? And they are 10-7. But because we've beaten them, we are, because of something, because the division record, because they played an extra game, because of the in-season tournament, they played an extra game and lost that in-season tournament game. That counts as a freaking division game. So, like, they played an extra game.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So the worst we can do is 10-6, which is a better division record than them at 10-7.
Right. They have no games left in their division or in our division.
And we have one.
So,
the in-season tournament may have hurt them.
Yeah, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility, I guess, for the Cavs to be able to catch the Bucks. Although I can honestly say that over the last week, I've spent a lot more time looking at the teams behind us, hoping that they don't pass us, versus looking ahead of us at the Bucks. I kind of feel like that ship had sailed. Although, if you only have to make up two games and the Cavs have the tiebreaker, it makes it a little bit more feasible. Although, again, I feel like Milwaukee's been playing better. I do think you make a great point that they've been pretty inconsistent. And I think part of that is, right, Middleton, you're still trying to reintegrate him back into what they're doing. But then I think the bigger part of it has just been that Lillard has been really, really up and down, and he's had way more poor games this season than he has at any point in his career. He's still had big scoring games, and he's still very capable, and obviously he's still a guy that you're afraid of in the last 2 minutes of a game that can create whatever kind of shot you want him to create. But the fact is that he has not shot the ball extremely well by his standards over the course of the season. And last year in Portland, I think it was his best scoring year of his career, and he has not approached that level of production as where he was at last year. So he's shooting just 42% from the floor overall. And let me see what he's shooting on threes, if I can find that. So he's shooting 36% on threes, which again, isn't terrible. That's probably like league average, but for Dame, clearly not up to the standard that you would normally expect from him. So look, the question I think becomes, right, when we talked about this, maybe the Cavs can catch him. I still think that Milwaukee is probably really realistically the only team in the East that has a chance to beat the Celtics. Although again, the Celtics, where are you at on the Celtics? Tell me where you're at.
I mean, I think they have to be the favorite in the East, right? I mean, they're up by 11 games. But there's just something that stench in the air, that entitled stench of the Boston Celtics. The whole thing with Mazzulla, like trying to block someone's shot when the whistle, like the quarter ended, like that's ridiculous. Get out of here. Get out of here with
that.
What
do you rank that compared to Jason Kidd's cup spill?
I don't know that. I think the cup spill is worse, but
I think the cup spill is worse when you're using props. I think that's probably worse.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, I just something about the Celtics, like, listen, I don't want to say this but would I be surprised if the Miami Heat somehow did it again? I just wouldn't.
I wouldn't be surprised either. I would not be surprised at all. Like, would not surprise me at all.
Like, listen, the best case scenario probably for the Cavs. Okay, let me just throw this out there. Somehow the Cavs, if Miami ends at the 7th seed and the Bucks end at the 2 seed, I mean, the Cavs probably, I think the Cavs want to fall to 4 in that case, because then we would play the Celtics in the second round.
So here's the question. Do you want the 2 seed if Miami's going to be there?
No, I don't. I don't want it. I don't want to touch it.
So I think if you're the Cavs, right, if you're the 3, it looks like you're probably going to get the Pacers.
That sounds good.
I'd be okay with that matchup. If you're the 4, that means you've probably been passed by most likely
the Knicks,
which means you get the Magic in the first round, which I think
I wouldn't mind that either.
I would much rather play Orlando. Now, I don't want Orlando to pass the Knicks and the Cavs. And for the 4-5, I really don't want to play the New York Knicks in the first round again. But I think for the Cavs, if you finish third and you're going to get the Pacers, or you're going to finish fourth and you're going to get Orlando, in both of those series, you'd have home court advantage. And then if you look at the second round, I'm not sure that, look, I guess from that standpoint, if you got the 2 seed and you could beat whether it's Miami or whoever it is, I mean, I think it's probably fairly likely that Miami would get the 7 seed based on where we are and based on who they are. But I don't know what you've heard, but everything that I've read and listened to, it sounds like that out of Philadelphia, that they really think that Embiid is going to be back at some point, maybe even in the regular season. And if you bring back, and look, Embiid's not going to be in great shape, and not that he ever is in the playoffs, as we've talked about over and over again, but clearly the Philadelphia 76ers, even with an 80% ramped up Joel Embiid, now suddenly that looks a lot different. The question is, I think, would you rather have a favorable first round matchup and then not have potentially home court in the second round against, it would obviously be Milwaukee, Boston's not falling through. So if the Cavs get to 2, you might have a tougher first round opponent, but then you'd have home court advantage in the second round. I think I'd rather have an easier, and don't get me wrong, the Cavs could easily lose to Orlando or Indiana.
Yeah.
But I think you'd rather have an easier first round series and then take your chances as the road team against Milwaukee. I'm not sure I'd feel that much better against the Bucks if we had home court advantage versus we didn't have home court advantage. And I'm not so
It ultimately, Mike, comes down to, is Donovan Mitchell able to play basketball? I mean, that's what
and
it
able
comes
to
down
play
to.
It at the same level that he's played it in the regular season, right? Last year in the playoffs, his performance was an abomination. I mean, he was terrible in that Knicks series. I remember we talked about it before game 5. I'm like, there's no way that Mitchell doesn't show up for this game in a big way. And he didn't show up for that game at all. And look, the rest of the team played horrendously, but your best player. And look, Mitchell's been a guy who has had huge playoff series and has been a guy who's played well, but he certainly did not play well in that series last year. And so there's a lot of interesting possibilities in the Eastern Conference and specifically for the Cavs. But I guess if I had to take my vote, I would hope that they'd get either Orlando or Indiana in the first round. And then, to be honest, I really don't care that much whether it's Milwaukee or Boston in the second round. And to be honest, I'm not so sure, as good as Boston's been, I'm not so sure I wouldn't rather play the Celtics in the first round rather than the Bucks. I mean, I don't think the Cavs really are going to beat either team, but we've played pretty well against the Celtics. And I really don't like the Cavs' chances of slowing down Giannis, whereas I think we have a better chance of being able to stop what Boston does well. And again, Boston could easily just blow the doors off the Cavs, but so could the Bucks. And so I think I'd rather take my chances with Tatum and Brown than Giannis and Lillard if I'm the Cavs.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
All right, coaches, listen up. It's time to kick this season up a notch and give your team the competitive edge they deserve with Game Changer. Game Changer is the ultimate tool for coaches, with features designed to help take your team to the next level. It's time to take this season to new heights. Download Game Changer for free on iOS or Android to start getting valuable stats and video your team can build on. Get the ultimate coach's tool today by downloading Game Changer. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
The other thing in the Eastern Conference, Mike, that I wanted to talk about was this whole debacle in Toronto. This guy, listen, I'm not blaming anyone on this except for the guy, but NBA, all these major sports franchises, all these major sports leagues, you fended off gambling for a long time. You pushed it off, and now it's here and you're partnering with all these companies. What did you think was, like, this was going to eventually happen, right, Mike? Like, this was eventually going to happen. It wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when. But the bottom line is this. Mr. Porter, right? His last name's Porter, right? Porter?
Correct.
Of the Toronto Raptors, not his brother, Michael Porter Jr., his decided that he was going to bet on some unders on himself. And instead of, like, trying to be conspicuous about it and betting, like, you know, a dollar or two and just making a little bit of money, he decided that he was going to throw like 10 grand and 8 grand and all this stuff on it. And here we are. He get caught. He bet the under on all these things. And by the way, the two games that he bet the unders on, he had mysterious injuries that he left after the first quarter or part of the way through the first quarter or first half. And it doesn't look good. And there's been all these people, of course, trying to scour different things. And there's been some, like, it's like the Zapruder films are going on with him. Like, there was the 3-point shot he took and he banked it. Like, it looked terrible and he banked it. And then he kind of gave a oops, like, he didn't mean to do that look. And, like, he just cost someone some money. And then there was the whole thing about how, I couldn't find it. I tried finding it, but I saw someone had paid him 10 grand for his jersey number. And then after, maybe it was RJ Barrett or part of that trade or whatever. And when that trade, he got 10 grand. And then 5 days later is when he bet the one 10 grand bet. So it's just, it's not good, Mike. It's not good for sports to have all this stuff possibly lingering in the future. Obviously, I think there's going to be other people. This happens, obviously, in the Major League Baseball is currently dealing with the Ohtani stuff. And which is much higher profile because who it is. And you know, I don't know, you know, they've launched a formal investigation. Ohtani says that he did nothing wrong, but it seems a little strange that his translator had access to all his financial information. That seems a little suspicious to me, Mike. I don't know how you feel on it, but.
You wouldn't think that the translator would be somebody that would have all your account numbers. Maybe your financial advisor, but probably not your interpreter. You wouldn't think. Yes.
So anyways, that's what I'm going to say, Mike. I don't know if you have any thoughts, what your thoughts are on the whole situation.
So I'll piggyback off your first point, which is that it was sort of inevitable that this was going to happen. And when you look at how, for basically the entire history of professional sports, the threat of gambling becoming involved in those professional sports was looked upon with extreme fear by the leagues. It was one of the things that they were most worried about across all sports, the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA. They wanted no part of betting, gambling. They didn't want it to be a part of their sport. They didn't want it to risk the integrity of the games. And that is going back from the origins of the league, right? You think about the Donaghy scandal. You think about the Black Sox in baseball. Leagues were deathly afraid of gambling influencing the outcome of games. And then suddenly, as sports betting becomes legal across the country in many, many states, suddenly all the leagues realized, hey, here's a new source of revenue. And look, I'm sure it's been a huge, I don't know what the numbers are, but clearly sports betting has pumped a huge amount of money into league coffers across all sports. And when that becomes such a big part of just the discussion of your league, and there's so many people that are betting on a daily basis, whether it be prop bets like we're talking about here, over under on a player scoring total, or you're talking about the outcomes of games themselves. And look, I don't claim to know a ton about all the gambling that you can do, but I know there's a lot of different things that you can bet on in any different night and any different game. And so the idea that you're going to have all this gambling around your games and discussed in relation to your games, and that no player, no one, when you have literally billions of dollars at stake, that a player is not somehow going to go off path and do something like we have in this case, I think that would be very naive to think that that wasn't going to happen. And clearly in this case, it certainly appears, based on first glance, that what we have is a situation where a player was trying to influence their own outcome, if not the outcome of the game, and benefit from that in some form or fashion financially. So then that leads to my second point, which is, how does the NBA handle this situation? And what is the penalty in this case for a player manipulating his own outcome and potentially the outcome of a game? And you can look at it a number of ways. You can look at it and say, well, in other sports, there's been a precedent of guys have been suspended for a year. You could look at, in football, what's the name of the guy, the receiver that got suspended from the Falcons? He wasn't playing. He was sitting out anyway, but he got suspended for a season.
Calvin Ridley.
So he was suspended. He was suspended for a year. You look at the Pete Rose situation in baseball, and he's been banned for what now, 30 years.
He's been banned. Like he's not, but he's. They've like started to like welcome him back into the fold a little bit. Like he can't do anything.
Official.
Essentially, he's banned.
And he can't be in the hall. And he can't be in the Hall of Fame. So
yeah,
he wasn't an active player. Obviously, you see what he doing tweeted? That while he was managing.
Did he see what he tweeted?
No.
Or he said, "If I would, I could have gotten away with it. I had a translator."
Pete. Well, let's put it this way. Look, Pete Rose, one of the greatest hitters of all time, and obviously the all-time hit king. I'm not sure he's a very good dude. Let's put it that way. I'm not sure he's the best person, but whatever, irrelevant in terms of this. But I guess my point is that you have lots of different examples of what penalties might or might not be. And so in this case, you could make one argument that, hey, this is the first time it's happened since we've partnered with all these online sports books. We need to make an example of this guy. Let's suspend him for 5 years, or let's ban him indefinitely and set a precedent. But then you look at it and you say, okay, well, what if instead of a guy who's a two-way player for the Toronto Raptors, what if it's suddenly a guy who is a top 50 player or an all-star player that loses his mind for a second and decides they're going to do something similar? Do you want a player who's in the prime of their career as an all-star to be suspended for 5 years or suspended indefinitely? I'm not sure that is what the league wants, but yet at the same time, they clearly don't want this repeated. And if it was done, if this guy wasn't a two-way contract guy for the Raptors, if it really was an all-star player, it would be a much bigger scandal. It would be clearly covered much more heavily than what this story has been covered. It would lead every single news story and news outlet and website and podcast and everything else. So I don't know where you go. I guess I would lean towards the side of they want to send a message, but they also do not want to paint themselves into a corner where if a bigger name gets caught with this, that guy is banned for 5 years or 10 years or for life. I think you're looking at more along the lines of that Calvin Ridley suspension, where this guy suspended for a year. And I'm not saying the NBA blacklists him, but I would guess that he's probably played his last NBA game, not because he's going to be suspended for life, but because there's going to be an unwritten wink, wink rule that, hey, we're not bringing this guy back. Versus if, again, if it was an all-star player, you've got a completely different scenario. And I think the league's going to be weary of setting a precedent that it may make sense for a guy on a two-way contract, but it might not make sense for an all-star, if that makes any sense. I see it being like a one-year suspension, maybe two, but this guy never is going to play in the league ever again.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think he's ever going to see the light of day. Hopefully Michael Porter Jr. doesn't catch any flack.
Hopefully not.
So
who knows?
So those were the main things that I wanted to talk about. Was there anything? Well, there was something else I feel like we talked and said when we talked earlier, when we were talking about what we were going to talk about tonight, but I can't remember what that was, Mike.
Well, I think we kind of hit it on the East, right? When we're talking about the Cavs and kind of where we hope they finish. And I think when you look at the Eastern Conference, you're looking at a situation where the 10 teams are pretty much set. And we thought we had that in the Western Conference, but we'll talk about that in a second, that maybe, although Golden State winning tonight on the road in Miami certainly was a huge win for them to sort of keep their playoff standings alive. But I think in the Eastern Conference, you're pretty much locked in that Atlanta and Chicago are going to be the 9 and 10. Then you have Miami and Philadelphia, both 18 games behind the Celtics. And then the Pacers are a game and a half ahead of the Heat and Sixers. I kind of feel like Miami and Philadelphia are going to hang in that 7-8 spot. And I'm not sure that Indiana can catch Orlando. I think the intrigue is from Milwaukee to Orlando, where those four teams finish. And like I said, from a Cavalier standpoint, I think you'd rather have an easier first round series, avoid the Knicks, avoid Miami, potentially avoid Philadelphia with Embiid. And if you could get Orlando or Indiana, two young teams without playoff experience, I would feel pretty good about the Cavs winning that first round series. And then you go into whether it's playing Milwaukee or Boston, they'd have home court advantage, Boston or Milwaukee would. And I think the Cavs, I don't think it would really matter that much if they had home court advantage. I think those would be two tough series regardless of whether you were the home court team or whether you weren't. So I'd rather have them win a first round series and then take my chances, see what happens from there against either Boston or Milwaukee. So that's kind of my take on the Eastern Conference. And then I say we talk a little bit about sort of the Western Conference playoff race and what's going on there.
So here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm looking at Houston's schedule and I'm looking at Golden State's schedule, Mike.
Okay.
I'm going to rattle off Houston's schedule the rest of the way.
Got it. Okay.
Oklahoma City, Utah, Dallas, Minnesota. Golden State, that's a big one. Miami, Dallas, Orlando, Utah, Portland, Clippers. That's three for sure wins. The rest are toss-ups. Only three wins you should feel good about if you're Houston. That's not a good sign for the Houston Rockets. And that's them saying, by the way, they've won 9 in a row. They are the hottest team in the NBA. Okay. And then here is Golden State's schedule the rest of the way. Orlando, Charlotte, San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, Dallas, Utah, Lakers, Portland, Pelicans, Utah. They have a much softer schedule, Golden State. Right? I mean, you got San Antonio, you got Charlotte, you got Utah twice, you got Portland. That's five games that they should win.
You got five games you should win, although they're on the road for what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And they're at home. They're only a home for four. So that makes a difference being on the road. Although what's funny about the Warriors is you think about last year, right? Their split, their home and away splits last year, they were like ridiculously good at home. And then they were ridiculously, almost comically bad on the road. And then you look at this season, and they're below 500 on the road at home. They're 18 and 19 at home, and then they're 19 and 15 on the road. So it makes no sense, right? When you think about the difference between last year and this year. So I don't know what to make of any of that. I would have to say that if you're betting on one of those two teams, you'd have to feel more confident betting on a team that's led by Steph Curry versus the Houston Rockets. And yet, I mean, it's funny with Houston, because if you go back 3 weeks ago, I think most people had come to the conclusion that the best young player, the best asset, the cornerstone of what Houston was going to become, that the guy who had evolved into that for them was Şengün. And then Şengün goes down with whatever, I think the ankle injury, and suddenly the team rips off 9 victories in a row. And look, here's Jalen Green's last 6 games, 37, 26, 42, 26, 41, 27. And you go back a month and a half to the trade deadline, and there was legitimate conversation. I don't know if there was legitimate conversation within the Rockets organization, but there certainly was amongst the media and NBA fans of, should the Rockets trade Jalen Green? Is this guy ever going to get it and figure it out? And look, it's a small sample size, but that's a pretty good line of games to say, hey, maybe it's starting to come together for this guy. Yeah. Maybe he's starting to figure it out. And then they've played small, and Jabari Smith has played a lot of center for them. And he's quietly had a really, really good season. I don't think he's ever going to be. It was probably the right pick to have him go number 3 after Chet and Paolo, and how well that the two of them have played. And they look like they're going to be, at worst, sort of the second best player on potentially championship teams. I think Paolo probably is going to be, his ceiling is probably being the best player. I'm not sure Chet, just because of his position, is necessarily going to be there, but Chet could be a good 1A or certainly a good number 2. Whereas Jabari, I think, is just going to be a guy who, he's going to play really well defensively. I think he'll get better and continue to improve as an offensive player, but he's never going to be your number 1 guy, but he's going to be a very, very good player in the league. And so playing him at center just has kind of unlocked these lineups and spread the floor for Jalen Green. So I just think that it's interesting, again, how the narrative has flipped on the Rockets, where people were ready to ship Green out of town 6 weeks ago, and Şengün was the guy that everybody was like, oh man, this guy. And now you're looking at it going, maybe we're better off with Jabari Smith playing center, and that gives us space for these other guys and maybe allows them to reach their ceiling. It's a good problem to have, that you've got almost, I don't want to say too many good players, because Houston's only 1 game over 500, but they have a lot of young guys that are players that other teams would certainly want, and guys that look like could be part of your long-term future. And so Houston, I would still bet on Steph Curry and the Warriors to make it out, but if Steph turns an ankle or something goes haywire in Golden State, the fact that Houston has put themselves in the running to be able to make a play-in after where they were 9 games ago, where they were 5 or 6 games behind the Lakers and Golden State, to rip off 9 wins in a row, pretty impressive, even though they're beating some of the worst teams in the league during that time. It still speaks to, I think, what Ime Udoka has done, and that team just, look, you got to keep playing. And it's clearly they haven't quit. And for Jalen Green, like I said, to make the turnaround that he's made, where people were seriously considering whether or not the Rockets should trade him, to now suddenly he's a guy that is just putting up big numbers every single night. It'll be interesting to see how they finish this season, whether they make it to the playoffs or not. It'll be interesting to see whether they can finish the season strong, or is this going to be whatever, once this streak ends, are they going to kind of fall apart? And I think that'll speak a lot about what Houston is going to continue to be and where these guys are at. I think I like what they have. I mean, I think their core of young guys is going to be pretty good for years to come.
Yeah. I think once again, speaking on the court, Ime Udoka is proven to be a really, really good coach.
Agreed.
And hopefully he's put the nonsense behind him, whatever exactly happened. I don't think we ever really truly knew what happened, right? They never really came out with all the details.
No,
nor do I really want to know at this point. But
correct.
So hopefully we're moving, they're moving past that, and we'll just see. Houston, I felt like when we talked earlier this year, that we both were pretty high on Houston. I think I was pretty high on Houston. I thought they were their upside. Maybe I was wrong. I don't remember. I don't know if you have your folder handy there, Mike.
Let's see. I have it somewhere. I know it was sitting around here. I know it was sitting around here somewhere, but I don't have.
It's okay. It's all right.
I'll roll away while you talk.
And you're
I'll,
rolling I'll away. Oh it. No, Mike's rolling
I'm
away.
I'm rolling away to find the folder. So
okay.
You talk and I'm rolling away for 10 seconds to find the folder.
Okay. All right. So like, I think the big thing is this, like, what can they do to get better? And I'm not sitting here and looking at their salary cap for them and what options they have. But I think they're a young team and I think they can build from it. They're not as young as Oklahoma City. So obviously Oklahoma City's got a little bit of a head start on them. I think the other thing too is when you look at the teams in the West, there just seems to be the teams in the West seem to be better, and their problem is going to be they're going to be competing with teams in the West that, you know, if they were in the East, I think Houston would be in for sure situation. If they were in the East, they would be competing for a 7 or 8 seed right now, not competing for a 9 or a 10 seed. I don't know how you feel on that, but and if you can't,
the future would definitely be brighter. I don't know where the folder went. Would definitely be brighter for Houston in the Eastern Conference, and not even the future, right? I mean, the team is the team, but clearly, you look at the West, and the Western Conference is just. I mean, at this point, it's just ridiculous how good the Western Conference is.
Except for the Clippers, they don't have an identity anymore.
Well, they have an identity. I'm just not sure it's the one that they want or thought they had for a 20 game stretch there in the middle of the season. I'm not so sure I wouldn't want to play the Clippers just because, well, we've talked about it to the nth degree. I think the thing with the Western Conference, right? If you're Houston and you're looking around and you say to yourself, okay, if you go through each team and which team is going to be there for the foreseeable future, Denver going to be there for the foreseeable future, Oklahoma City going to be there, Minnesota going to be there, the Clippers, debatable. The Pelicans, I think, going to be there. Dallas, Luka puts, I mean, your floor is pretty high when you have Dallas. Sacramento, say what you want, but De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis are two guys that if you have those two guys on your team, I don't think you're playing below 500 basketball at this point in their careers. Phoenix, could they fall off? Injury, maybe. The Lakers could, I guess, theoretically, potentially fall off depending on what LeBron wants to do.
I'm coming home. I'm coming.
But if LeBron comes back and you have LeBron and AD, I think this is the Lakers are as
he's
bad
not,
as.
I'm making it right now. I'm like, he's not going to be a Laker next year. All I don't know that he,
we'll
I don't know. I know I we've had after their a bit the Cavs abysmal loss on Miami to Miami, I texted Mike and said, have I mentioned that I think the Cavs could really use a LeBron? But I don't think he's a Laker next year.
All right. So then the Lakers potentially could fall off. I think Golden State clearly could fall off. Houston's obviously on the rise. Utah, I think, is still, I'm not sure what they're doing. I'm not sure where they are in terms of their rebuild. They obviously have a lot of draft capital coming from Minnesota and the Cavs, although none of it at this point, with as good as those two teams are and where they sit in the standings, none of those are plumb picks as of this moment that are going to be franchise altering. But so I'm not sure where Utah is in their rebuild. Memphis, you get Ja back on the court healthy, and that was a team that their core was number two in the West last season. So you got to think they're going to be much, much better next year.
I meant to bring this up. I meant to bring this up like a week and a half ago. Did you see The Rock took a shot at Ja on SmackDown? Did you see that?
No, I did not. No.
So I know you're not probably up on the whole wrestling scene, and I had completely been off on the wrestling scene, but now The Rock is back. So I've been kind of just like, I catch it on the TikTok a little bit, Mike. I try to get, and he sang a song about this guy, his adversary right now in the WWE.
Okay. All right.
And he says, and he said, you're as useless as John Morant when he's waving around a gun. And then he goes, I love you, Ja. I love you, Ja. It was pretty funny. Like, I hope get better soon. But I thought it was pretty funny. It was in Memphis too. The episode was in Memphis. So there was a reason for that connection. But I thought it was Ja taken getting taken by the Rock.
Taking some shrapnel from the Rock.
Yeah.
So Memphis is gonna be better. Portland, I don't know where they're actually at. Theoretically, they should be semi better, but I'm guessing they're probably a tanking team next year. And then we've talked about the Spurs. I mean, I think the Spurs, if I was going to bet right now on what team is going to take the biggest leap up the standings next year, to me, I think San Antonio.
Pro Skills Basketball is the nation's premier club basketball organization, building a European-style youth basketball academy, and is looking for the top basketball leaders in major U.S. cities to become our next city directors. Specifically, Pro Skills is looking for women and men of high character and grit who see the problems in youth basketball and want to join an elite team focused on a singular mission to change the culture of youth basketball. This job typically begins as a part-time position with the desire and expectation from both the city director and Pro Skills that together they will build it up to eventually support a full-time city director position. If you're interested in learning more or applying, please visit proskillsbasketball.com/jobs.
I saw an interesting trade floated out there, Mike.
Okay, lay it on me.
Devin Vassell in the first round pick or second round pick for Darius Garland.
Well, look, I kind of like that trade. I kind of like that trade for both teams.
I saw that floated out there.
Garland is probably a better talent,
but I think Vassell might be a better.
Vassell fits, I think, really well with what the Cavaliers already have on the roster.
If the Cavs were to feel good about Donovan Mitchell's future and staying in Cleveland, if he signs that contract extension, then I would be okay with that trade.
I agree. I would be fine with it. Like, and look, I like Garland, but I feel like this year he's kind of reverted, not all the way back to when he was a rookie. He's not nearly as bad as he was that year, but I just feel like he turns the ball over way too much. And it feels like he just, there's something off. And I don't know whether it's been the injuries that he's gone through this year, whether it's just the fact of he's not as comfortable as he was pre-Donovan Mitchell. I don't know what to make of the whole thing, but I do know that he's still a really good passer. He still has the ability to score. And if I'm San Antonio, he's really good at throwing lob passes, and he's proven that time and time again with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen here in Cleveland. So I could see where he would be a guy that the Spurs might want to put in the backcourt with Victor Wembanyama. And then conversely, like we said, on the Cavs side of it, if you take Garland out of the equation, now you clearly just make Donovan Mitchell your point guard. You put Vassell in at the three. That allows you to slide Max Strus back to the two. Vassell is a really good shooter at the three, better defender than anybody they have. Clearly, he's a better overall player than some of the other guys that were playing at the three as far as being an all-around guy, better offensively than Okoro. I would say a better overall player than Dean Wade. And so then you still have the Mobley-Allen overlap, but I think Vassell just makes Donovan Mitchell your point guard, and then you go from there and see what you have. So I wouldn't be super opposed to that trade. I like Garland. I think Garland running his own team could make sense. I don't like the idea of, I don't think you can win a championship with Mitchell and Garland as your two guards. I just think that two guys at that size, you're just never going to be as effective as you need to be on the defensive end, and their skill sets are redundant. So if I could get something that maybe it's Maybe Vassell is 90%, you know, 90 cents on the dollar for Darius Garland, because I'm not sure Vassell is an all-star talent, but I think he might be a better fit, and he's a really, really good player. And sometimes you need really, really, really good players around your stars who don't necessarily need the ball or kind of overlap the way Garland does. So I'd be okay with that trade. And I think it would make sense for San Antonio too. I think Garland's a guy who's young enough that he fits the window with Wembanyama. And I think the window, look, not to win a championship, but the window to be a winning team opens up next year for San Antonio, because I think the sky's the limit for what Wembanyama can be.
Okay, I agree. I saw that trade and I thought I'd share it with you. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know the money piece of it all and all that, but I can't imagine Vassell's making that much money, right? Because like,
he signed an extension. He's making pretty big money. He's not making as much as Garland, but I think he signed, I don't know it off the top of my head, but he's making a good amount of money. Let's put it that way. I'm going to look it up while we're talking here and see if I can find it quick. Because I forget. I think he signed an extension. Roster. I think they have the contracts. Yes, they do. Let's see. Devin Vassell. Well, it only has this year's salary, but let me see if I click on Vassell, what it gives me for contract wise. News bio. I think he signed an extension. Yeah, they don't have his contract, his full contract on here. I only see what he's making this year, which I know that, like I said, I'm pretty sure he signed an extension.
He signed a, here you go. San Antonio signed, I'm on Sport Track. I don't know what you're on.
But, okay.
Signed Sport Track. He has got a five year contract. Next year he'll be making 29, then 27, 27, 24 and a half, 27. He's unrestricted in 2029.
There you go. So you'd have him locked up for the long term, which Garland is also locked up for the long term. And so Vassell's not cheap, but again, is he a $30 million player? Probably, right? I mean, he's averaging almost 20 a game, shoots it well from three. He'd be a guy, again, that would fit really well in the Cavs. Good defender. So, I don't know. I'd be okay with that trade, and I think San Antonio fans would probably be okay with that trade too.
Okay.
I have one last question for you, unless there's something else that
you want to hit on. No.
Okay. So, my last and final question, I guess, is do you think the Pelicans overtake the Clippers here? They're a half game behind.
Yes.
Right now,
yes.
As we speak, I agree.
Yes.
I agree. Yeah, I think so too. And so now you look at New Orleans probably having home court advantage more than likely. I mean, the Clippers are only a game and a half ahead of Dallas. So maybe Dallas jumps the Clippers. And they're only a game ahead of the Pelicans. I mean, the Pelicans are only a game ahead of the Mavericks. There's so much fluidity. Again, Phoenix is only 2.5 games out of the 4 seed at this point. So even though we were basically burying Phoenix a minute ago, they're nearly as close to the Clippers as the Cavs are to the Bucks. So
yeah,
it's probably premature to bury anybody in that Western Conference from spots 4 through 8. I think it's going to be pretty fluid. And if one of those teams catches fire, if I had to bet on it right now as it stands, I think it finishes New Orleans at 4, Dallas at 5, Clippers at 6, Kings at 7, Lakers at 8, Suns at 9, Warriors at 10. That's how I see it.
I mean, I know the Suns have to have the gauntlet, but like if LeBron's not, I mean, I don't know how many more games he's going to miss. He's missed 10 games this year.
I just don't know how many wins there are on that Phoenix schedule. I mean, that Phoenix schedule is brutal. That is just brutal.
Well, you can count on the winning the game against the Cavs, probably.
But. Right. That was the game they played really well. And look, the Cavs have made a lot of teams look good recently. So thankfully they didn't make Charlotte look good last night. Hopefully they'll take care of business again.
Listen, we didn't talk about it, Mike.
What's that?
How about the junkyard dog, baby? Morris. Morris, do you see his press conference after the game?
No, after he got tossed. What did he say?
I was just sick of them going to the lane and getting a wide open bucket. So I decided I was going to throw an elbow. If that's what my team needs me to do, I'm going to do it. They gave him the gold chain after the game, Mike. They gave him at the game. He played 7 minutes. And that completely changed the complexion of the game. It really did. Him getting it, like, listen, I know it's a small victory, okay? It's a small victory. But he's the only reason we won 3 games ago. Hitting those threes. And then that game. So that's 2 games. So he's theoretically changed the outcome of the game.
I am not a fan of the Morris brothers, as anyone who has listened to the podcast knows about me. But I will say that sort of having a tough / borderline dirty player on your team, sometimes in the playoffs, messages need to be sent, or at least there needs to be somebody who is willing to fight back, and also somebody who's willing to fight back that if they do get ejected, doesn't crush your team because they're one of your 3, 4, 5 best players. So from that standpoint,
would you call him the Dante Jones of this team, Mike? The Dante Jones of this team?
If that's what I'm getting from Marcus Morris, if what I'm getting is a dose of intimidation and physical revenge when the Cavaliers are coming out, maybe not playing, playing soft, and Morris can inject a level of toughness, then I'm okay with that. I don't want Marcus Morris playing 22 minutes a game and taking 8 shots in his 22 minutes.
Unless he makes all 8 of them.
Unless he makes all 8 of them. And look, he's played, I guess you could say, well since he's been here, but there's certainly an element of Marcus Morris that I do not want on this team, but the element of bringing a little bit of physical intimidation and toughness and just saying, hey, we're not putting up with getting pushed around and being physically manhandled. If he can come in and sort of right that ship at key moments in the playoffs, so be it. I'm all for that. I'm all for that. So,
all right, let's end it there, Mike.
Let's end it there on the Marcus Morris. The positivity of Marcus Morris.
We are going to be on a 2-week hiatus unless you do a solo episode next week, Mike. But you've always said that maybe you're going to do a solo episode and then it never happens. So I'm going to say we're going to be on a 2-week hiatus.
We'll see. We'll see what I can pull off. We'll see. I have a little bit of, well, I guess I always have lead time. It's not like you surprise me and say suddenly like you're going to be at Disney the night before you go. So I do have some advance warning, which I normally do. So maybe I'll work to try to get,
Cal hop on and talk about NBA. Would he talk about NBA?
I don't know. We could see. I don't know. We could see. I don't know. I'll figure something out. I don't think I'm going to do a solo episode. Those are A, not fun to do, and B, they're really difficult. Kudos to anybody who can even do 10 or 15 minutes talking just completely on their own. It's much, much more difficult than it looks. So maybe I'll work on getting an NBA guest. Who knows? A special guest. There you go. We'll see what I can do. So maybe we will see you for next week's NBA episode. You certainly will see us for our next interview episodes. I believe after this one, the next one coming up will be Triple Double number 8 with Rob Brost. That's what's going up on Thursday night for our regular episodes. So make sure you check that one out. Thanks for sticking with us tonight for this NBA episode. And we will catch you on the next one. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your coaching portfolio guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.